Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, produced in New England at WHUS Stores. I'm Dory Smith. More on White House Chief of Staff Karl Rove, this time on Talk Nation. TalkNation.org for news and discussion on politics, human rights, the environment, and more. Today we will talk about Karl Rove's use of the press with Bill Israel of the University of Massachusetts at Amherst and Stephen Schlesinger, director of the World Policy Institute in New York. Bill Israel came to know Karl Rove when the two taught courses in politics and the press together at the University of Texas at Austin. In a story July 6th in Editor and Publisher, he asks us to save the First Amendment from Karl Rove and argues that the Valerie Plame CIA case is an exception to rules about unnamed sources because Karl Rove sought to commit fraud by using members of the press for patsies. I asked him to talk about what he meant in this case when he used the word patsy.
In my experience, there's no one who is more adept at working news people, or rather working the news media, than this Bush White House. And the Bush White House, politically, is run by Karl Rove. Karl is an exceedingly able person. When we taught together at the University of Texas 7 years ago, I watched and had my breath taken away. I was astounded. In 20 to 25 years of political reporting, I had never seen anyone as good as he was. And so I say that because I've never seen anyone more adept at using and effectively using news media.
He sort of changed media, didn't he, in adding more of a public relations angle to journalism because of the way that he worked the media. Just talk about what that means now that you're looking at this First Amendment challenge about sources and disclosures.
Well, I'm not sure how different an approach Karl has been from the Nixon White House. He once called himself a diehard Nixonite. The nature of media or operating with media in the Nixon White House was to effect control. President Nixon used to say to his public relations people, let's not get up in front of the media until we know exactly what we want the headline to look like tomorrow. No statement, for example, might be over 100 words in order to maintain control of what the message would look like. Certainly, Karl has refined on that approach, but in short, we're looking at a means of control. So fundamentally, I'm not sure the modus changes. It's the refinements that have been astoundingly effective. And those aren't totally Karl. We're looking at a huge change in the culture of media in this country over a period of about 30 years. It's not just the media in the country that have become more right-leaning. It's all the institutions behind them that have helped change the dialogue in the country. So, for example, there was one right-leaning think tank in the 1940s when it was founded, the American Enterprise Institute. But by 1980, when Ronald Reagan took office, there were 70. Now there are 500, and those institutions are helping the White House change the dialogue, change the culture politically of the entire nation. In terms of Karl, why is this different? This is different because, in my judgment, although almost all the time journalists must protect the confidentiality of their sources, it seems to me that in this instance they're protecting someone who has used the media in order to perpetrate a fraud, if you will. The entire argument about the Iraq War was dubious at best, as we now know. And in using the First Amendment, or rather in invoking the First Amendment now to defend not giving up a confidential source, in this case I believe to be Karl, I believe that the journalists have been used to protect the perpetration of a fraud as opposed to being used, having the amendment used, or rather their confidentiality provision used to advance all the points of view that need to be aired here. Overwhelmingly, presidents, by definition of what news is, get first shot at the news. I mean, the news really is the president's to use as he will or as she will, we hope, ultimately, because prominence is an important news value. As one looks at 8 or 9 news values that govern or certainly reflect what gets aired on radio or television or over the net, prominence figures high on the list of who gets aired, and there's no one who's more prominent than a president. As a consequence, presidents go in with great advantages in dealing with the news and have an opportunity to abuse it. I mean, there are many, many examples of that over a long period of time in Republican and Democratic administrations. But in this instance, it's very clear that one of the central skeins, if you will, of what this White House has been about has been advancing a war in Iraq whose footings were dubious at best. And now, in this instance, we see an effort to protect that flank. And the effort by the special prosecutor to get at it is apparently getting into how delicate the White House position really is.
Now, it would be delicate, just to add a question here, it would be delicate if there were a lot of power left in the law and in the checks and balances that are supposed to coincide with this rise to power of someone like Karl Rove.
Well, I think it's delicate because the administration's venture into this war was not well considered at the time. In terms of its legitimacy, it was dubious at best. And so the effort to bring Ambassador Joe Wilson under control by effectively outing his wife was an effort to get at Wilson in order to protect the president's position. And as you know, anytime you advance a lie with another lie, as Mark Twain says, you have to keep making up more.
Let's go to the issue of the reporters. We see Judith Miller still in jail, as I understand it. And going back to the Vietnam War era, I don't recall that any reporter stood out as someone who helped the process of defending the war in the way that someone like Judith Miller has, in the sense that she worked very closely with one of the Pentagon's prime architects of the propaganda that went back and forth between Iraq and America, and that was Ahmed Shalabi. And so now we see Judith Miller, she didn't even involve herself in the writing of a story about Valerie Plame, the woman who was outed by whoever leaked her name to the press, and we're thinking now that's Karl Rove. So Judith Miller goes to jail. How ironic is that? And I mean, to what extent does that reveal either hyper-control of media and of realities and truths versus a kind of breaking down of this control?
In my judgment, at least, the Judith Miller case is different. I'm not at all clear of all the pieces going on in her case. It feels to me a little bit different than the Matt Cooper case, in which there was a clear link to Karl Rove. And the complications around the Judith Miller piece are not at all evident to me, and I don't think they will be until the prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, finishes his work. What concerns me is that it appears that millions of people were misled as a function of that kind of reporting. The use of Ahmed Shalabi as a source, the selection of that source by the Bush White House helped to mislead millions of people. And so I find that ironic at best to see Judith Miller in the position she's in now.
Well, her editor at the New York Times, Bill Keller, is also confused about what charges might be brought against her, which kind of leaves the discussion about what the New York Times did or did not print with other reporters. And it almost seems like we're dealing with issues of larger responsibilities. All of the members of the mainstream press interviewed Ahmed Shalabi. He was not just Judith Miller's source. And but, yet many people blame her for the fact of his rise in prominence as a spokesperson for Iraq under the new U.S.-led government.
The New York Times bears a special responsibility in our culture for its being traditionally the best of the best. It now has substantial competition, as we know, but nevertheless, the national security reporters for the New York Times tend to be specially attended to as a consequence of what the Times has been historically. I think the Times and Judith Miller bear special responsibility around this war, and I think the Times last summer began to acknowledge that point in the semi-apology it rendered to its readers in noting that it, too, had been had by the Bush White House in the run-up to this war.
So where we are with this sort of Machiavellian person that you know well enough to call friend, but also well enough to adequately describe in this very ambivalent way, we're talking about a time in history when everything seems to be coming undone, and yet there's hyper-control of information about what's going on, so that we get really finely sanitized, glossy descriptions, narrowing the issues down into terms of values. And that, of course, we've seen in both Tony Blair and George Bush lately as they talk about this horrible tragedy that hit London on the 7th of July. But when we think about that, do you see larger pictures at work with the media that might be discussed as the Valerie Plame affair is more analyzed? I'm talking about the not only the role of the press, but also the way someone like Karl Rove has impacted it in the larger ways. I mean, you talk about his disdain for reporters, for example. Have reporters just become objects to be manipulated from the highest offices in the land?
I would argue that this question goes back much longer than it might be apparent. One can see the transition, for example, in the work of Walter Lippmann, perhaps the greatest journalist of the 20th century. After World War I, Lippmann, concerned about the vulnerability of the news and its importance in attempting to help people prepare, said that the task of liberty falls under three basic heads, and the first he regarded as protection of the sources of the news. In other words, he felt if people could get adequate news, if they could rely on the news that came at them, the chances of being a self-governing people were pretty good. Only 2 years later, in his book called Public Opinion, Lippmann turned around 180 degrees and said that as a consequence of public relations, as a consequence of political communication, the opportunity for people to be informed had been sacked, and that the power of persuasion would change every political calculation. This, in short, is a very old story. It dates from at least that part of the 20th century. We have seen in this latest incident the refinement of those methods to a degree Lippmann wouldn't recognize. There's a line from Macbeth in which Macbeth himself says, "Nothing is but what is not." If you let those words sink in for just a moment, you begin to get the feeling not only of what Macbeth faced with the three witches and the war he was facing, but the kind of problem that Lippmann was fingering after World War I, and the kind of problem that always whips up around war. Journalism faces a similar problem as people in the war business do. It's that question of the fog of war. The problem in journalism and in politics is the same. How to determine truth from falsehood, how to split out the misleading tactic from the reality on the ground. I'd argue that it's only a consequence of that sorting out process that we in the public go through in sifting intelligence that we achieve the capacity to self-govern. But the object of this kind of political communication is to mislead to an end result that the misleader desires. And that's the issue that's at stake here now.
I want to ask you finally to talk about what you wrote specifically here, and I'll read it. Mm-hmm. You've said that little has changed since Bush left Texas with Karl Rove.
Mm-hmm.
All roads still lead to Rove.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, quote, when former U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson challenged President Bush's embrace of the British notion that Saddam Hussein sought to import uranium from Niger to produce nuclear weapons, retaliation by Rove was never in doubt. While it is reporters Matthew Cooper of Time and Judith Miller of the New York Times facing jail time, the retaliation came through Rove Uber outlet Robert Novak, who blew the cover of Wilson's wife, CIA operative Valerie Plame. Those are really astounding words coming from someone who knows Rove and understands the power behind him. Just talk about your description.
Karl is a very capable person. I grew to know and love him as a consequence of a personal event that happened to a mutual friend of ours in which he and I found ourselves scrambling to try to help that person out in the death of his wife. So I learned at one level what a kind person Karl can be. In the process of teaching with him, I also learned he was the best political operative I'd seen in 25 years of looking. No one is cannier than Karl at using the press, whether through charm or larger forces. I have great respect for his ability to do so, but I think it must be absolutely clear that there's a truncheon being used here, a truncheon being used on the public. Sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's not. In this instance, by the use of journalists and journalism and the First Amendment, it looked subtle, when in fact it was not at all. And part of the duty of journalists and the duty of a prosecutor in an instance like this is to get to the pattern of behavior that's being used to mislead.
Bill Israel, thank you so much for talking about this very controversial man.
Pleasure.
Bill Israel teaches journalism at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. His July 6th story, Save the First Amendment, is available online at Editor and Publisher. You can read this interview online at talknation.org. I asked the director of the World Policy Institute, Stephen Schlesinger, what the world might be like without Karl Rove in the White House.
Many are going to argue that with Karl Rove possibly leaving the White House, there's going to be a much different political tone coming out of Washington. I don't believe that for a moment. The fact is that George W. Bush, when he was a member of his own father's administration, was considered the enforcer in that administration. He was the one who helped fire people on behalf of his father. He's used to very hard-bitten, confrontational politics. That's one of the reasons he brought Karl Rove into his campaign. So if Karl Rove leaves, he's going to get another Karl Rove in there. That's the way Bush has always been as a politician. As we can see, for example, the latest controversy with the John Bolton nomination for the new envoy to the UN, who is seemingly detested not only by the Democratic Party, but members of Bush's own Republican Party. Nonetheless, Bush continues to push Bolton's nomination. And it's a kind of in-your-face politics, which Bush personally practices. So while if Rove leaves, there might be some difference in terms of who the replacement is, I don't think there'll be any difference in the kind of politics that will be practiced in the White House.
Do you think that ethics in this White House have so changed, so fallen down, let's say, that we should expect more of the same just across the board then in terms of all of the policies that have been enacted? Just thinking of them offhand, I'm talking about the Patriot Act, but also all of the economic policies that have shaped how we now see our country in very, very different terms from, let's say, the way we had just a short 10 years ago.
Well, I think there's no question that the atmospherics in Washington are much different than they were under the Clinton administration. Now, Clinton himself was always being accused of being slick willy and pulling fast ones on the American public. And obviously, he was up to mischief with Monica Lewinsky, but he never played hardball politics the way this administration plays it. Just remember the Swift Boats campaign against John Kerry, which basically disabled his campaign in the 2004 presidential race. That's very typical of this, the way the White House operates. That's why nobody really is surprised that somebody in the White House leaked the name of the wife of the Ambassador Wilson, who exposed the fact that there was no uranium being mined in Niger for Saddam Hussein. His wife was exposed as a CIA agent, and there was no feeling of compunction or shame for the White House in doing this, because this is the way they practice politics in this administration. So I don't think there's going to be any change. I think it's going to continue. I think it's part and parcel of the way George W. Bush runs his administration. That's the people he collects around him. Karl Rove is simply one of a number of people who do this kind of thing, and it's not going to end until George Bush leaves office in 2008.
Would you mind commenting, too, on the whole question of national security as it relates to the Karl Rove-Valerie Plame leak case? Now we know Karl Rove was indeed the source and did provide at least confirming information about Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame, a CIA operative. She is someone who was in the field at risk, and it's possible that many people, in addition to her, were endangered by the release of her name to the public. That's something that we now know Bob Novak did, but many other people are involved in this story. From the moment that her name was released, national security questions and laws relating to national security came up. Just talk about that from the perspective of someone also watching changes being instituted that possibly threaten the Constitution over the very question of national security.
Well, I think national security has been the bloody shirt that is waved now by Karl Rove, George Bush, and most of his administration. If you look at the congressional race of 2002, 9/11 was the mantra that they used throughout that election, and they used it very effectively to win that many of the congressional races in 2002. They used that mantra of 9/11 in 2004 very effectively against John Kerry. They're going to try to use it in 2006. George Bush understands, as Karl Rove does, that if you can convince the American people in terms of national security that we're being threatened by an intemperate evil enemy, and that only he, George Bush, can protect you, then people are going to rally around you, and that's the way you win elections. So these people are very skilled at using all the facets of national security to keep themselves in power. This is the way they have really run their administration for most of the years they've been in Washington.
And this scandal has also raised issues of the press. Have you thought of issues that are most important to you that have come up surrounding the issue of the press and what kinds of pressure has been imposed on America's press with the Bush administration in power?
Well, the Bush administration has made reporting on the administration's policies over the last 4 to 5 years difficult, in the sense that if you disagree with the Bush administration on, for example, the Patriot Act or some of the other manifestations of so-called defense measures against terrorism, then you're unpatriotic. And this has made it very difficult for the press to be objective. We saw a real illustration of this when the Bush White House was preparing the American people for the invasion of Iraq in 2002 and 2003. It was very difficult for any reporter to argue, hey, you don't have to invade Iraq. We've got sanctions there. They work. There's no weapons of mass destruction. All this stuff is propaganda about the ties to Al-Qaeda and the WMDs. It was almost like if you opposed the arguments that Bush made, you were actually being subversive or working with the enemy. So I think the Karl Rove strategy has been to paint the press as either with us or against us. And if they're against us, they have to be severely sanctioned and criticized for being unpatriotic.
Now, certainly there has been a change in the last week or so as members of the White House press corps took on Scott McClellan, the White House press spokesperson who's been commenting on Karl Rove and, much to his dismay, is now being called on those comments because he had denied that Rove was the kind of person who could do this. Now he's stuck with that denial and is being asked to account for himself, and he's basically stonewalling, saying nothing, as the White House has also taken it upon itself to say absolutely nothing, in spite of the fact that the president had called for the resignation of anyone who would have leaked the name of a CIA agent in the field. So that change is there at least. I mean, it seems when they argue that first, we have to do this for national security, institute the Patriot Act, whatever, go to war. Then we are doing this, even though it seems like you've caught us in a lie. We are the people with the values here. We are the best people. Trust us. And so that part, at least, of the administration's line would seem to be not possible to defend anymore, right?
I think so. I think what is happening is that finally the press has caught one of the leading members of the Bush administration in a dirty trick. Now, this administration has been full of dirty tricks, but they've never been pinned down and caught in a kind of flagrant demonstration of what has been going on behind the scenes for a long time. And the press also understands that Bush is a lame duck at this point, and so they feel freed in that sense to start pounding away at these previously powerful and almost uncriticizable leaders in Washington. And I do think this may be the beginning of a change in the whole way the press covers the White House, because it's no longer, they can't simply flip aside this whole question of what Karl Rove did and say, well, we're protected by national security. They've been clearly caught in a possible illegal act, and they can't wish it away.
Now, did you happen to see the most recent White House press conference where Scott McClellan tried to take on what we would have to call the kind of press corps that one might have seen during the Nixon era? They just kept really pummeling him with one question after the next. So that is a little bit of a sign that the American media is awakening, let's say.
I think that's true. I think you've got your finger on a very important point, which is that I think you'll start seeing many more critical stories of the Bush administration as a result of that turning point press conference. I think you'll find that the media is, in a sense, going to be liberated by finally having the self-confidence to take on an administration that has been very manipulative in terms of the way they handled any criticism, either on the Iraq war, on national security issues, on the Bush administration's approach to domestic politics. All of those things are now going to be open game for the media. And I think you'll see much more of that in the coming months.
Stephen Schlesinger is director of the World Policy Institute. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Dori Smith, and you've been listening to Talk Nation Radio, produced in the studios of WHUS Stores in New England, whus.org, and talknation.org for a transcript and discussion about this topic.